mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the unparalleled power of the Findlay formula. 10 straight years as America's top micropolitan community. Economic Development Director Dan Schaefer joins us to talk about this major milestone a decade in the making. Also this morning, the solar eclipse as a tourism event. With just 5 weeks to go, Visit Findlay Director Alyssa Preston explains why it's important to put our best foot forward and the planning that's required to do that due to the challenging and unknown nature of what's coming. And with Community Read Month upon us, a new survey finds 7 in 10 young adults are listening instead. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, March 4th, 2024. So a ban on open burning is now active now that the spring season has started in Ohio. Open fires are now prohibited in most unincorporated areas between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. every day. It's interesting in the story, it notes open fires prohibited in most unincorporated areas. Incorporated areas in the state of Ohio have burn bans, you know, pretty much all the time. But this for the spring season. The precaution has been in place each spring for decades due to the heightened risk of wildfire, typically caused by windy weather and plants that are not yet green again from winter. The burn ban started on March 1st and runs through the end of May. So, just a reminder, no open burning in the spring in the state of Ohio. By the way, speaking of burning, have you seen the pictures of some of the wildfires in some parts of the West? I think Texas has a big wildfire right now, and some other parts of the Rocky Mountains, I believe. Saw some of the images on the news the past few days. This is kind of interesting. A new analysis of Redfin data and risk factor data concludes that climate change may be impacting fire risk across America. They found that homes in Wyoming carry the greatest fire risk in the United States. What they did is they looked at listings of homes for sale all across the country. This is where the Redfin data comes in. And they looked at risk factor data as to the likelihood of fires, the risk of fires in these homes. And HouseFresh did this, housefresh.com. Finds that homes in Wyoming carry the greatest fire risk in the United States. 90.7% of homes in that state carry a major risk of fire. Arizona comes in second place with 53% of homes in danger. Probably not surprising that the Southwest and Great Plains areas of the United States carry the biggest risk, while the odds in the Northeast and the Midwest are relatively low. Cheyenne, in terms of cities, Cheyenne, Wyoming, is the top spot overall. Riverside, California, comes in second place in terms of cities with extreme fire risks. Here's some good news, though. The analysis finds the percentage of homes in Ohio with a major fire risk is zero. 0.0%. So we don't have to worry about it. We don't have to worry about that. Although that being said, there are always things that we have to worry about, something we have to be fearful of and concerned over. Every day has to be something that we're worried about. And here is today's story. And again, it has a spring bent to it. Monarch butterflies are dwindling in numbers. The World Wildlife Fund led an annual survey of the species and tallied the second lowest number of monarch butterflies on record. According to this year's estimate, the eastern monarch butterfly colonies took up 2.2 acres of regional forests, which is over 50% less than during the 2022-23 winter season. So a 50% decline Officials say monarch butterflies have a key role in sustaining plant ecosystems, but their habitat is depleting from heat and drought that has been brought on by climate change. So we're at risk of... Yeah, that's what we're worried about today. More monarch butterflies, apparently. Let's see. Crazy story out of Columbus. And I don't know if you happen to see this. I saw it on the newswire. I was like, kind of left shaking my head. But I guess this is a sign of the times that we live in. Columbus police say posts on social media about a shooting at Easton, you know, the mall, the shopping center, Easton Shopping Center, over the weekend in Columbus, posts on social media about a shooting at Easton are not true, did not happen. And this speaks to all kinds of things in modern society. One, the spread of misinformation on social media. You know how quickly rumors can spread on social media. It's not really necessarily a reliable source of news and information. And here's another example. And secondly, I think it really speaks to just kind of the mindset that we are in, that we live in today, where you hear something and your thought immediately goes to active shooter. That's the first thing. And people's sensitivities to this are heightened just because of things that we've seen in the news. Some people were sent into a panic after seeing others running and claiming to hear gunfire around one of the buildings on Saturday at Easton. A spokesperson for the shopping center says public safety workers and Columbus police searched the area and found no evidence that any shooting had occurred. Speaking with local media, a representative from Easton's public safety office says the panic may have been related to a car that was backfiring. So certainly it is good that, you know, everything ended well, but again, just kind of speaks to the mindset these days where you hear something like that and immediately you think somebody's shooting. You know, that's just what you have to think of these days. And then, of course, you have the panic. You know, one person sees someone else running, and so they start running, and it just kind of snowballs from there. But it turns out it was most likely just car backfiring. So, good news, but that could have ended tragically, certainly. And we're still learning more about COVID-19 and its impact on society. A couple of stories here on the Newswire that I thought was interesting. The COVID-19 lockdown, it says, may have had a positive impact on babies. First of all, there are more of them. People were locked down with nothing to do. They made babies. And apparently these babies, according to a new study, finds that newborns during lockdown appeared to have healthier gut microbiome compared to babies born pre-pandemic. They're healthier. They're better able to fend off disease, the gut microbiome. And they have fewer food allergies, which is kind of interesting. Babies, newborns during lockdown have a healthier gut microbiome and lower rates of food allergies. The study analyzed samples from 351 babies during lockdown. They say potential factors include a decrease in infections and antibiotic use because the babies weren't out in public picking up bugs from other people and other babies and so on. So fewer infections means fewer antibiotics and an increase in breastfeeding during the pandemic as well. That's not to criticize antibiotics. They're certainly very useful in combating harmful bacteria. They also could destroy beneficial bacteria. A decrease in infections and antibiotic use correlated with higher levels of good bacteria. And so healthier overall babies out of the pandemic. I knew there had to be something good out of all of this. However, us grown-ups did not fare as well. According to numbers from the CDC, alcohol-related deaths surged during the pandemic. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, finds there are over 480 deaths per day from excessive drinking in the U.S. during the height of the pandemic. Officials say social isolation, stress, and delays in getting medical care could have all been factors. They also point out that alcohol carryout and home deliveries were also more available during the pandemic. And the CDC says the spike in deaths could give states a reason to make alcohol less accessible. So this is why we can't have nice things, because we can't handle it, apparently. But here is some good news. Speaking of the pandemic, apparently there was still, and I don't know how many people realize this, apparently there was still the recommendation to quarantine for 5 days for anyone who contracted COVID. Apparently that was still in place, but no more. The CDC now says Americans with COVID no longer have to isolate for 5 days. The agency revealed new guidance on Friday. New guidelines say that those with COVID can return to normal daily activities if they haven't had a fever for 24 hours without the help of medications, or if their symptoms have been improving. So it's okay to go back out into society. You don't have to quarantine yourself. The CDC added that it urges those who end isolation to wear a mask. It urges, doesn't require, there's no requirement here. It urges those who end isolation to wear a mask and limit close contact with others. The director of the CDC says the goal is to continue to protect those at risk for severe illness while also reassuring folks that these recommendations are simple, clear, easy to understand, and easy to follow. So no longer have to isolate for 5 days if you come down with COVID. So show of hands, anybody who came down with COVID, were you still isolating for 5 days? Were you still doing there? Were you treating it more like a cold? Where maybe you stayed home for a day or two and then resumed your normal activity. I think we were doing that already. But anyway, now it's official. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny today, a high reaching the low 70s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid 50s. Over the past decade, Findlay's industrial sector has expanded significantly, contributing to 10 consecutive top micropolitan wins, as measured by Site Selection magazine. Dan Schaefer is executive director of Findlay Hancock County Economic Development.
Over the last 10 years, or the Findlay decade, Findlay Hancock County industry booked 291 projects. All but five of these projects were legacy companies reinvesting, expanding, and adding jobs. Speaking of jobs, Findlay remains a regional employment hub with over 21,000 employees commuting daily into the city.
And senior editor for Site Selection magazine, Gary Daughters, says Findlay is literally playing out of its league with capital investments for 2023 that would have earned it Site Selection's number one ranking among Tier 3 metros, the next class up. And he says that's just amazing. Get more on this recognition and this story on our website. The family of Stone Foltz, a BGSU student who died in a hazing incident 3 years ago, is involved in a civil trial stemming from his death.
The final defendant in that case, Daylen Dunson, served as president of the university's Pi Kappa Alpha chapter when Foltz died. Dunson previously pled guilty to reckless homicide and hazing charges. During testimony, Foltz's mother shared the promise she made to her son while he was in the intensive care unit.
I told him I would do everything until I die to help save lives and get his story out there.
Foltz's parents are seeking $225 million in damages from Duncan. The judge's decision is expected at a later date. I'm Tracy Townsend.
The Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation's Fund for All series of free community events is continuing this month. According to the foundation's website, the March events include Symphony Storytime with the Lima Symphony Orchestra at the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library, as well as spring art classes for adults and families at Awakening Minds Art. The Fund for All series started in January 2023, and that year more than 10,000 people attended events, such as family movie nights at MCPA and free play days at the Children's Museum. Get more in the story on our website. And remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, we're talking about big news we got on Friday, the unparalleled power of the Findlay formula. It is now 10 straight years as America's top micropolitan community. And Economic Development Director Dan Schaefer is with us this morning. A major milestone, no question, to hit this. It's unprecedented.
Well, Chris, thank you. It's good to be with you again. And yeah, it's like deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra might say.
In a good way.
In a good way, yeah.
This is something that site selection has never really seen anybody to, you know, make this a decade in a row.
I believe it's been quite a while. There was a community down near Fayetteville, but they had two micropolitan communities in one county. So, yeah, this is unprecedented.
And I also thought it was really interesting, one of the notes that Findlay is sort of punching above our weight. We would have been number one even as the smallest metropolitan community.
Micropolitan is ranked populations of 10,000 to 50,000. The next tier up is 10,000 to 200,000. So, yes, that's correct.
Yeah. What is the, I mean, I know we've talked about it before, not just what is the secret to making it happen, but to make it happen 10 years in a row?
Well, it's a great question, and it's just we stick to our knitting every single year. It's stakeholder engagement. As I think your audience knows, the Economic Development Office, function of the Findlay-Hancock County Alliance, is a private organization, and I emphasize private, don't work for the county or the city, and that's important. Our office is supported by the business community. They sit on our advisory board, and with stakeholder engagement, we are advised and informed at all levels with C-suite executives every single year, and as you know, the majority of our projects over the last 10 years, indeed last year, are with our legacy companies. Existing companies that are looking to expand and invest.
I thought that was really interesting, too, that the bulk of this actually comes from the companies that are already here and the growth that they are experiencing.
291 projects over the last 10 years, and the vast majority of them were existing companies. Of the companies that we attracted to Findlay over the last 10 years, only six.
But those are the ones, it's interesting because those are the ones that get all of the headlines. I mean, when we have, you know, an R&L come in or we have a Sheets come in or, you know, McLean years ago coming in, you know, those are the ones that make big headlines, but it's that quiet, more quiet expansion that actually is the meat of it.
It's really attention to the existing companies and having relationships, and I'll emphasize the word relationships with leadership at those companies. If we don't know, we can't help. And so it's good that we have those relationships and we reach out to them and visit with them on a regular basis to know that. And you mentioned attracting new companies. That's hard. It's a long game and you lose almost every game. But if you don't suit up, you don't end up, as you pointed out, with an RL Carriers or a McLean or a Campbell Soup or a ZF who supports the Ford F-150 in Detroit. So it's a long game, but you suit up and every two or three years you might win one. In this case, last year, Sheets.
Yeah. You mentioned the fact that the Economic Development Office is private. It's not a public entity, but yet cooperation is key with all of those public entities.
It's a good point, Chris. So, yeah, on our advisory board, we have government representation, the City of Findlay Executive Office in the form of the mayor, Mayor Mern, City Council Hellman, and County Commissioner Bateson. So we do have a good relationship with our counterparts in the county as well as the city.
There has also been, and I think the last time when it was 9 years in a row, we talked about this. You're seeing a growing, I don't want to say competition, but a lot of communities in Northwest Ohio, in Ohio in general, are doing very well as well. Is it a case of rising tide lifting all boats?
I think it's rising tide lifting all boats, but the state of Ohio, and particularly Northwest Ohio, is really business friendly. Wooster, Ohio, Defiance, Ohio, Greenville, and Sydney, Ohio, all in the top 10 of what they would call top micropolitans, of course, with Findlay being number one at the top of that list.
And again, as we were mentioning, the fact that Findlay would have been number one in the small metro areas, that would include places like Lima, Mansfield. So we're, and I think for a lot of folks, we would kind of put ourselves in that category with like a Lima or a Mansfield.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the day when our population grows to 50,001, so we can compete in that category as well.
Yeah. It was interesting. A couple of years ago, there were some rumblings from the government of maybe recategorizing micropolitan communities to go to 100,000 instead of capping out at 50,000. I don't think that ever anything came of that. But for anyone who might have been concerned if that redesignation would threaten our status as number one top micropolitan, apparently not.
No, it's nice to say top micropolitan, but at the end of the day, we're going to do our job. We're going to go out and work with our companies, whether we have a micropolitan designation or not.
So, again, because so many communities in Northwest Ohio in particular, and Ohio in general, are also doing well, is there some level of competition, or are there different factors at play?
We call it coopetition, and so we have friendly relationships with all of our economic development counterparts in Northwest Ohio, as well as in Ohio in general. But when you're working to attract a new company like Sheetz, we're in big-time competition, not just with Ohio, but with Michigan, Indiana, right. Pennsylvania, right. Kentucky.
What is the key to keeping this going? I mean, obviously, like we said, the Finley formula works. It's been proven time and time again. But at the same time, you can't rest on your laurels. What's the key to keeping this going beyond, you know, for the next decade?
Well, first of all, we're not looking at 11 years in a row. And if anybody suggests that to me, I tell them to go outside, spin around three times and spit in the wind. You don't count on it and you don't look to do it. You do your job month by month, week after week. And the key to it, as I've mentioned before, and people get tired of hearing it, is stakeholder engagement, bringing the right people to the table on whatever the project is. Whoever's going to touch that project is stakeholder engagement. We call it the Finley formula.
When you talk about stakeholders, there's much more than just having the spot, having the infrastructure in place, the water, the electricity, the gas, that kind of thing. Much of this comes back to quality of life, the housing availability, you know, all of these other types of things that sometimes don't get recognized or don't immediately think of, but companies take those things into account as well.
They do, but they are not really the decision maker. I mean, it's nice to have. Mm-hmm. Basically, the bottom line is they want to know, can they operate and be successful here? Part of that, then, at the equation is in quality of life. You mentioned residential and housing and workforce over the last 5 or 6 years, and I've said it before, residential development is our number one workforce initiative. We can't build houses fast enough. We have, before COVID, 25,000 people commuting to Finley to work every single day. Last year, that number dropped to 21,000, and that's because we're building more houses. People are living here. Some people are working remote, but I'd like to see that number come down even further.
So, again, yes, the point being, all of these things that we talk about under the umbrella of economic development, and, you know, again, when we talk to you in different times throughout the year, we're talking about different aspects of it, but it is all pieces of the same puzzle.
It is, and we really just have six core pieces that we work on, or buckets, if you will: retention, attraction, workforce development, community planning, downtown Finley itself, and small business. We work in those six categories and nothing else.
And I know that there's only so much that you can say about anything that may be in the pipeline, but there's no sign of slowing down.
No, the leads that we're looking at continue to come, and we're in a position where, Chris, we can be afford to be more choosy now, and that's a good thing. We don't want to just look at every single company. We've been consistently, we meaning the community, in the top five for wages in the state over the last 5 years, sometimes leading that list, and we're talking top five with Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, and Toledo. So, yeah, we will be choosy as we look at those companies, and we can say no, and we do say no.
Like I said, you're not going about it with the idea of this is the goal to make 11 straight years.
Correct.
But at the same time, knowing that everything that you do plays into that, it would be good to be, you know, a year from now talking about 11 years in a row.
Go outside and spit in the wind, Chris.
I'm trying to get you to say it, but I know you're not going to say it. Economic Development Director Dan Schaefer with us this morning. A major milestone, a decade in the making, 10 years as America's top micropolitan community. Dan, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks, it's much appreciated.
So we are down to 5 weeks exactly to the big day. And this morning in our eclipse countdown series, we're talking about the solar eclipse as a tourism event. Visit Findlay director Alyssa Preston is with us in the studio this morning. Alyssa, thanks very much for dropping by.
Good morning. You kind of made me lose my breath there when you said 5 weeks.
5 weeks. I know. It's going to be here before you know it. It's big. We've got Easter, then we've got the eclipse, and then we've got tax day. You know, like, it's going to be very busy. We get into the month of March, April. But in any event, 5 weeks to go. You were just telling me before we went on the air, planning for this has been very unique as compared to what you normally do. You're planning for Balloon Fest, or you're planning for, you know, some big celebration, Oktoberfest downtown, or whatever it might happen to be. You kind of know what to expect. You've got a very specific set of activities, a specific defined area. This is not that.
Not at all. We're kind of planning for what we don't know.
How is that different? I mean, how do you approach that, again, not only not knowing what to expect, but not knowing what you don't know?
Sure. We have reached out to other communities that were in the path of totality in 2017, mm-hmm. and really took some notes from that and learned that we should just do what we do best. Each individual organization, safety service, do what they do best. We're here to promote the things that others are putting out there. Mm-hmm. So really, safety was the biggest concern. And what we hear is that 10-day out marker is really when you know what you're going to get. So looking at the weather 10 days out, and folks will decide if this is the location that they're going to stick with, or if they're going to move maybe a little further south. Mm-hmm. We do know there's a lot of activity going on all throughout Ohio, so there are a lot of options.
And that's interesting, because in reading some of the stories about what other communities are planning, not just in Northwest Ohio, but obviously this is going to be something that a large swath of the country is in the line, the path of totality. And we've spoken with some other communities and other places around the country who are all kind of taking a slightly different approach to this. We have kind of taken a pragmatic approach, not planning a big celebration, a big event, and that kind of thing. Talk about the decision to approach it in that way.
So we had decided, as we were talking, you know, do we have a big festival? Do we close down streets? No, the eclipse is the event that we're planning for. People are going to be looking in the sky, and that's what we want them to do. We want to make sure that they are have some things to do before and after that we can get people from viewing site to hotels safely, and really just letting these folks find their way with how they want to view the eclipse.
Because when I first heard that we were going to be in the path of totality, my first thought was, and maybe this was yours too, just the immediate thought is, we could have the biggest party that this city has ever seen. Yes. This would be really, really cool. But then you start to think about all of the implications.
Yes, the infrastructure that we have in place. We're set up so well with I-75 here that's going to pull people in. We just want to make sure that our community shows well, and these folks that do come visit come back to see us too, when they can come experience some of the fun things we have in our community.
Right. It becomes kind of a shift of mindset, because, I mean, was that your first thought, is that, you know, hey, we could make this a big,
absolutely,
huge thing?
Absolutely, yes.
And then initially when you start to think maybe that's not the best idea, again, my next thought was, that's kind of a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Almost.
So we do have some folks that are planning small viewing site, I would say mini festival type of things, that there will be plenty of places to get out and have fun. We're looking at kind of Saturday through Monday, that there will be different events. There's a third party planning an event at Marathon Center with a concert. Mm-hmm. Northwest Ohio Railroad Preservation has things going on at their site. The University of Findlay is really taking this and running with their planetarium and the Mazza Museum.
Sure.
So a lot of really neat little niche things that are happening throughout the community. And I think that will pair really well with the big event.
Over the course of several days.
Correct.
Is going to be the key to making all of that work. So as you mentioned, from a tourism, travel and tourism standpoint, it becomes more about putting our best foot forward to make a good impression, and maybe some folks come back in the future.
Absolutely. We know we can handle a few thousand people mm-hmm. and do that well. So that's what we're looking at. We do have our hotels are busy. We certainly are not sold out at this point, but we have people coming. So we want to make sure that they have a great time.
And then the question becomes, how do we make sure that we do, in fact, put our best foot forward?
A lot of meetings have been taking place over the last 18 months. We do have a hospitality council that my organization meets with just to kind of go over some best practices that we've heard. How do you prepare your restaurant for the influx? We kind of look at it like this is a day that folks are going to go camping or beach. So think of food to grab that you're going to go sit outside and eat. Mm-hmm. That really all of our small businesses are ready. So it's been really exciting to talk to folks. It was 2024 happened. We turned the calendar and that's when the light bulb went off for most. So it's been a busy few weeks getting some things in place.
It's getting really real now.
Yes,
again,
when
we talk about 5 weeks out, this is really getting to be a big, and is there some, I would imagine there would have to be some apprehension, some nervousness among those, again, in the hospitality sector?
Sure. It's, again, that unknown,
number
one. Who will we have here? How many will we have here? And it's almost like a holiday for our community. So workforce is a little bit of a headache right now, thinking, am I going to have employees to be able to open? So we're really sending the message. We see booking trends of Sunday, Monday. So those businesses that typically aren't open Sunday, consider being open Sunday, maybe taking Tuesday as your your weekend day that week.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You know, I'm sure you're getting a lot of calls, a lot of questions. Again, you know, how do we approach this from a travel and tourism standpoint, and what's your guidance that you're offering for folks?
Just exactly as you said, let's put our best foot forward here. We don't know what we're going to have, but we really want to show well. So any preparation we can help, there's a lot of resources out there. So we are definitely sharing those as we can. We have a local website, Findlay Solar Eclipse 2024, that we're putting permitting information on, how you view this safely, what events are happening. There's a whole lot of information out there that we're trying to best equip all of our partners.
And I guess there is a certain amount, and I'm sure this always happens, whenever you've got an event that brings a lot of people to town, some people will be inconvenienced. With this event, who knows how many people may be inconvenienced by this, and some, as a result, may sit back and say, well, why do we want to even encourage people to come here at all? What is the response? Why do we want to encourage people to come here?
It's a great opportunity. We have a great community. We have great businesses that we want to showcase. We hear time and time again from visitors when they pull off of I-75, they say, I had no idea this was all going on in this little community. So we definitely want to showcase that. A term Rob Martin with the city keeps using is pack your patience, that we don't know. So you may sit in traffic, you may not, and that would be fine too. But just be prepared. If Sunday and Monday are your typical grocery shopping days, maybe do that earlier in the week prior. Just plan accordingly that you can be home. We're encouraging locals to go to your local parks. There's viewing sites throughout all of Hancock County. If you can walk to those sites, just gather with your neighbors. It's a really a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
And from the standpoint of, you know, hotels, restaurants, museums, anything that would be considered a tourist attraction, are they embracing this? I mean, the vibe that you're getting, are they embracing it? Are they fearing it? Maybe a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. Yeah. And I would say in the last 6 to 8 weeks is when folks are really thinking, how can we make this an opportunity? Mm-hmm. The one thing to our local community, there's a lot of educational things happening between now and the eclipse. And that's all on our website. As I said, MASA and the University of Findlay, the historical museum, the library, the parks, they have all embraced this greatly and really taking advantage of how neat it's going to be.
Well, for those who are not looking forward to it, I guess the good news is that it's not going to happen for another 75
That's
years.
Right.
So
yes.
We don't have to worry about it again.
Again, that once-in-a-lifetime thing that you'll be worried about.
And I would imagine that on April 9th, you will be going on vacation yourself, probably.
I'll probably be thinking about it, yes.
ready for a little time.
A little bit, that might be.
Again, Alyssa Preston is director of Visit Findlay, talking about the solar eclipse as a tourism event and the delicate approach. It really is boils down to, you know, getting this right. We don't want to go overboard. We don't want to go underboard.
Correct. Doing what we can handle and having a little fun with it.
Yeah. Alyssa, thanks very much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it, Chris.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
You know, Cambridge University is full of smart people, right? It's one of the most well-known, prestigious universities in the world is Cambridge University. And apparently, some of that that knowledge, that incredibly smart brain power was put to good use by Dr. Christina Ilko, I think is how you pronounce it. She's a member of the university's academic staff, who found herself locked in the bathroom of a dorm over the weekend. Ms. Ilko, Dr. Ilko, I should say, accidentally got locked in the bathroom on Thursday, and the room was not due to be cleaned until the following Monday, which would be today. So she locked herself in the bathroom on Thursday. It was not going to be cleaned until today. She said, I tried to bang on the shower head on the door, tried to break it with brute force, was shouting for help, but to no avail. No one could hear me. This is her speaking to the BBC. Fearing that she would be trapped for days, Dr. Ilko emulated her childhood hero, the TV problem solver MacGyver. She managed to escape her potty prison by picking the lock with an eyeliner and a cotton swab that she fashioned into a hook. In true MacGyver style, when I eventually got out and the door opened, it was exhilarating because I didn't think it would work. She said, I expected to be there for 5 days or maybe even longer, but thank goodness I made it out. Thank goodness for Cambridge University ingenuity. Right there. They're very smart people. Cambridge University. The story goes on to say, interestingly enough, that the lock has since been removed from the bathroom door. I'm not sure that that's a good idea. I'm not sure that I would want that, but in any event, at least they know that nobody's going to get locked in again. Cambridge University. That's embarrassing. The most prestigious universities. An academic PhD at one of the most prestigious universities in the world got herself locked in the bathroom. But at least she was able to escape. More from the international file, the broken news this morning. And you knew it was only a matter of time before we had one of these stories in the news. A Spanish-Dutch artist plans on saying I do to an AI hologram this summer. That's right. An artist, a Spanish-Dutch heritage, an artist plans on marrying an AI hologram this summer. Alicia Framis intends to marry Alex, or AI Lex, Alex, a partner who was trained based on the information. the hologram, the AI hologram was trained, get this, using information from her exes. She took the best qualities from all of her exes, eliminating the bad qualities, and fed that into the computer, and she got her perfect partner. The ceremony will feature a unique ritual for the union, and guests will be served molecular food, whatever that is. Molecular food that can be enjoyed by both humans and humanoids. You knew that this was going to happen eventually, right? Ms. Framis is already thinking about their future and questioning if she should open a joint bank account with her groom and if he needs life insurance. All righty then. You know those artists, they're weird type. They're weird sometimes. Some of the other broken news headlines to pass along this morning. Authorities in Jackson, Mississippi are investigating after a dog was found sleeping in the middle of the road. I'm not sure exactly whether sometime last week this was in the news. Dog found sleeping in the road. The reason? He apparently ingested a large amount of marijuana. Workers, we can chuckle because dog's going to be okay. Workers from Animal Rescue transported the animal to a nearby shelter where he tested positive for an extremely high level of cannabis. A veterinarian said his system had to be flushed with fluid, but otherwise the large black dog seems to be in good health. So you got to be careful with marijuana. Sleeping it off in the middle of the road. See, this is what happens when we fiddle around with legalizing marijuana. You never know. Law of unintended consequences there, but the dog will be fine. Now, here's... I hope the Spokane Police Department throws the book at this guy. Malcolm Davis is facing charges after allegedly stealing a cell phone from a blind woman. What are you doing, man? Spokane Police Department says officers arrested Mr. Davis for the incident downtown on February 21st. Apparently, he walked up to the woman and asked for money. When she refused, he allegedly grabbed her Braille cell phone and took off. Police found Mr. Davis a short time later and recovered the stolen phone. She's got her phone back. And throw him away. Lock him up and throw away the key. I mean, you steal from a blind person. What is wrong with you, man? A couple of other items here. The broken news. Another one from the international file. It wasn't quite the Y2K disaster, but dozens of gas pumps in New Zealand were forced out of service on Leap Day, all because the computer systems were not programmed to accept the date of February 29th. They couldn't deal with it. February 29th. A number of gas station chains there in New Zealand reported difficulty processing card payments. Motorists have been turning up and unable to get fuel, according to a spokesperson for Gull New Zealand. It has been incredibly frustrating for our customers, and I would imagine for the companies as well. John Scott of Invenco says the problem came from a software update from the early days of the pandemic. And just now revealed itself, because it's the first leap year since the pandemic, I guess. And finally, not quite Y2K, but it was a rather messy 24 hours in New Zealand. Apparently only in New Zealand, though. That's weird. And finally, in the broken news this morning, in New York's East Village, millennials have found a club where they can party like rock stars, but still get home at a decent hour. The cocktail bar Joy Face in the East Village throws Saturday night dance parties twice a month, from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. sharp. And that's when they close. One partier, Alicia Roldan, said, "I danced my face off and then I left. I was literally in bed by 11. She said, "It's cool being able to feel like you're dancing all night, but still getting home before midnight." The matinee social club event was supposed to be just a one-off until video of the dance party went viral. And so now the cocktail bar is doing this twice a month for adults who want to have fun but also have the responsibilities of a full-time job or a family. The matinee night scene is the perfect solution, they say. That's right, cut loose and Party like it's 1999, but do so reasonably. There you go. Some of the odd and unusual side, some of the most odd and unusual headlines here. Today's broken news report. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Primary election day is March 19th, and WFIN is presenting a series of candidate forums so you can hear from the candidates you'll see on the ballot. Coming up on Monday, the candidates for Hancock County Commissioner, Holly Frischi, Jeffrey Hunker, and Jeff Wobser.
The candidate forums, presented by the Hancock County Republican Party.
Join us Monday at 5 p.m. live from the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You've heard the old saying that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, how many people are in your village? A recent survey of 2,000 working parents found that the average person relies on 6 people to help support the growth of their child. 6 are in that village for most people. For 46% of parents, the grandparents are number one on that list. Grandparents. Extended family like aunts, uncles, cousins, and so on also help contribute to their child's development. Those were at the top of the list. Only 8%, though, would include neighbors in their village. Only 8%. I would have thought that that would have been higher than that, but that really stood out to me. I guess it is the we just don't know our neighbors like we did generations ago. I thought that was kind of interesting. Survey was conducted by Lightbridge Academy. Also found that the average parent worries about child care 6 days a month, and 32% are concerned about the quality of care that their child receives while they are at work. So as we mentioned last week, March is Community Read Month, and this year's featured book is Hidden Figures by Margot Lee Shetterly. Of course, everyone's familiar with the story of Hidden Figures by now. Perhaps you've seen the movie, but this is the opportunity for the entire community to come together and read the book. That's the idea behind Community Read each year. And of course, the featured event is coming up this weekend. No, next weekend, the 16th, with the Imagination Station coming to the library to talk all about the eclipse and space and, you know, all of that, kind of building on the theme of the book. So, and again, we were talking about all of this this past Wednesday on the program, and when Sarah Clevedens from the library was with us, she mentioned something that I thought was kind of interesting. She mentioned that she is actually listening to the book, the audio book of the Community Read book, Hidden Figures. And that actually brought this to mind because it popped up the other day on my news feed. A new survey from Spotify finds that over 70% of young adults, we're talking 18 to 34-year-olds, are listening to audiobooks these days. A growing number of people are listening rather than reading. And I was surprised at that number. 70% of young adults are listening to audiobooks. And joining us this morning to talk more about this survey is Xavier X. Jernigan, Spotify's AI voice and head of cultural partnerships on the platform. Xavier, tell us more about this.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. We did a consumer survey of over 1,000 Americans nationwide, and it showed that people are turning to audiobooks for comfort listening. Relaxation is one of those things.
Yeah.
63% of our respondents listen to audiobooks to help themselves relax. 51% listen to audiobooks for comfort. Those are the top emotions associated with audiobook listening. Plus, 41% of audiobook listeners prefer audiobooks because of the cognitive benefits, like improving their memory or keeping their minds active. And that's something that I listen to audiobooks for. It helps me, and it's something I need. It helps me, but I need it. I need to keep my mind active, and I need to keep my memory sharp. And as you mentioned before, Gen Z and millennials lead in audiobook listening. 72%, like you said, of 18 to 34-year-olds are listening to audiobooks. So we found a lot of really rich findings in our research.
Yeah, obviously a lot of benefits to this and really interesting numbers there. So with all of that in mind, you've got something that that Spotify is announcing now, and give us the details on this this latest program or this latest access here.
So all Spotify premium account holders, those are eligible account holders. So you have to be a primary account holder on your duo plan if you have a duo plan, or if you have a family plan, you have to be the primary account holder.
Okay.
You have access to 15 hours of audiobook listening per month. That's from our library of over 200,000 audiobooks, which includes 70% of the best-selling titles out there. And this is the thing. You can now listen to your audiobooks right alongside your favorite podcast. We have a library of over 5 million podcasts. We have a library of over 100 million songs. So your favorite artists, your favorite songs, albums, your favorite AI DJ, you can listen to all of us side by side. We're the only platform in the world where you can do that.
And of course, our podcast is on Spotify as well. So talk a little bit about the types you mentioned. You mentioned that there's a wide variety of titles and authors that will be available. Give us some examples here.
Yeah, so whether you're into Shakespeare or Star Wars like me, there's a lot to discover. Britney Spears released a new memoir recently called The Woman in Me. People have been waiting to hear her story told on her terms, in her own words. She's not the narrator of the audiobook, but now you can go on and listen to her memoir. Jesmyn Ward's Let Us Descend, that has been all over book clubs this year. So we have a wide range of titles, anything you could want to listen to. My mom gifted me Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson. Christmas time last year, I haven't had the time to sit down with the physical book. Now I can listen to it.
Yeah.
So those are some of the benefits, but it's an array of titles that if you want it, I'm pretty sure it's going to be there for you.
Yeah, not just obscure stuff. I mean, this is these are some of the most talked about titles that are out there right now. And so how do folks learn more? I mean, what is the process we need to sign up if we're already a premium Spotify user? How does this work?
If you're already a premium user, all you got to do is just any audiobook that's marked as included in premium,
okay,
just press play. If you're a free user, go ahead and upgrade to being a premium subscriber. If you don't have Spotify, that's not a problem. Just go into App Store, whether you're Android, whether you're Apple, download the Spotify app, subscribe to premium, and then just hit play. Go on the home feed. And then right at the top on our home recommendations, just click on audiobooks, tap that. You can go right into our audiobooks library or go into search. Type in the title that you want or that you're looking for, or scroll down to the audiobooks hub and then find the audiobook, press play, and enjoy yourself.
Great way to still be able to enjoy your favorite books, relax a little bit. Great stuff there. Again, Xavier X. Jernigan, voice of Spotify's AI DJ, head of cultural partnerships on the Spotify platform. X, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
By the way, I did look, and Hidden Figures is not among the books that is included in Spotify Premium, but you can get it on the platform. It's like $5. So, again, if you would rather listen, you want to still take part in community read, you'd rather listen than actually read the book, you can do it that way. So don't discount that. And, again, as we mentioned last week, if you want to get more information about the community read program, you can go to our webpage, goodmornings.net, and scroll down to Wednesday's show for the link with more information about community read. And all of the audiobooks that are on Spotify, we've got that linked up to that section of their website on today's show, again, at goodmornings.net. So all of that information is there online. And with that, we finish up our podcast for today. Thanks to all of our guests, of course, for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Mayor Christina Mern recaps last week's State of the City address and shares her reaction to the Findlay decade of economic development success. Plus, what's behind the big run-up on Bitcoin over the past week? It seems investors can't get enough. Is it time to jump on the bandwagon? So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.